A lot of us, after the shock of seeing those Abu Ghraib pictures 4 years ago, have not gone out of our way to see them again. But some people, like Errol Morris, have spent years looking hard at them, trying to figure out what they really show. Studio 360's Lou Olkowski talked to artists and writers and a former soldier about the power of those photographs.
Sometimes when I come home at night, I find my neighbor sitting on the stoop, puffing a cigar and drinking a glass of wine. We disagree on politics, especially the war. The night the Abu Ghraib photos broke, he looked like he really needed the wine. I said, "Looks like your team took a hit today." And he said, "We all took a hit."
Men and women in military uniforms posing with naked Iraqi prisoners. There are shots of the prisoners stacked in a pyramid. And in most of the pictures, the Americans are laughing.
First, it was just like disbelief, like, wow, did people really do that? And then it was like, yeah, they did do that, and they did it, you know, purposefully.
Jose Vasquez is a 14-year Army veteran, trained as a cavalry scout and a medic.
I know at some point when I was looking at these pictures, like, I just felt like, okay, that's it. Like, I can't handle anymore. I've got to go home. And I kind of felt sick physically.
The pictures brought an end to his Army career.
I know exactly which one it is.
He applied for conscientious objector status.
There's a guy in an orange jumpsuit. His hair is kind of close-cropped. And then there's a soldier, Caucasian male, with a black beanie on his head. And he's handling a German Shepherd. And the dog is sort of barking or snapping at this person. The guy in the jumpsuit, his hands are tied behind his back. And he's just sort of cowering away from the dog.
The detainee is so scared, his face looks like a corpse.
The body type, you know, looks like my dad, looks like my uncle. You know what I mean? Like, that's how somebody in my family would look.
Here's Goya, Disasters of War.
David Levi Strauss is a professor of art criticism who writes a lot about photography.
This is Mogadishu.
He spent 4 years studying those images. He still lectures about them and some of their precedents.
You see how similar they are with the celebration.
He's showing me pictures from Fallujah, where the bodies of four American contractors were burned and hung from a bridge. That was March 2004, 1 month before we saw the Abu Ghraib photos.
They had signs made up, Fallujah, the graveyard of the Americans. For Americans seeing these images from Fallujah, it separated the Iraqis from us, saying, we wouldn't do this.
The bystanders are gleeful.
We wouldn't celebrate the deaths of somebody.
Then he shows me some pictures from American history.
That immediately made me think of lynching photographs. Postcards made of lynchings for people to send to their families and loved ones. And one of the prominent features of these photographs were the crowds celebrating when a lynching occurred, and often the body was burned afterwards.
One of these postcards has a cruel greeting.
This is the barbecue we had last night. Your son, Joe.
Lynching reminds us of the most famous image from Abu Ghraib, the man on the box wearing the pointed hood.
Goes back to the Spanish Inquisition. The Ku Klux Klan.
It perfectly combines the oppressor and the oppressed into one neat little symbol. For Steven Eisenman, a professor at Northwestern University, the symbolism is a little too neat.
The fact that that became the face, the image, of Abu Ghraib made it less likely that the public would become aroused to anger about U.S. torture in Iraq and elsewhere. The image of the man on the box became the iconic image, and it allowed most Americans to dismiss the other images.
Because the other images from Abu Ghraib were a lot worse.
Men who were shown masturbating, men who were shown having oral sex with other men, or at least feigning that. There's some images of naked Iraqi men who piled up in the floor. And we are notoriously prudish Americans, for the most part. And to see these men shown in these sexualized scenarios persuades us, even though we know that they were forced into it, somehow persuades us that maybe they are kind of you know, dirty.
Eisenman wrote a book called The Abu Ghraib Effect. He looks at a long history of images where pleasure and pain are blurred. One example is from Michelangelo, a sculpture of a bound slave.
A kind of twisted body with one arm reaching behind the man's head, another arm holding the binds that go across his chest. We see one leg crossing another. We see his perfect and idealized nudity. But this is a man who is bound up. He's a captive. He's a slave. And yet the expression on his face is one of ecstatic pleasure.
He looks at imagery from Michelangelo to Francisco Goya's drawings from the Spanish Inquisition. Ben Shahn's famous poster of a shackled, hooded figure with the words, "This is Nazi brutality." And Robert Mapplethorpe's photographs of S&M subculture. That history wasn't lost on Fernando Botero.
I did a testimony of something that was not acceptable.
He's an artist from Colombia, well known for paintings and bronze sculptures of very big, very happy people. But the photos from Abu Ghraib unhinged him. Almost immediately, he started working.
I was putting my anger into the paintings. The more I painted, the less angry. I felt like lighter and lighter because I was really obsessed with this thing. I'll tell you, I worked like 12 or 14 months in this, you know. It was like an obsession.
He considers this work a permanent accusation, there to remember when we might otherwise forget. Like Goya's images from the Spanish Inquisition or Picasso's Guernica.
One thing that struck me as also part of the humiliation was that before touching the prisoner, they put these green gloves.
Surgical gloves that look a lot like the ones you put on to clean the toilet.
Like to touch dirt. It was really, oh my God, really, it was, everything was a humiliation. Everything, even these gloves, what an humiliation.
Other artists have used the images more directly. Shortly after the photos hit the news, protest posters appeared online and on city streets. They mimicked Apple's iPod ad campaign, dancing silhouettes on brightly colored backgrounds.
We recognized in the Apple campaign itself a kind of a violence. I mean, the gestures that those figures are making were, you know, you could describe them as rapturous or you could describe them as violent. But I mean, literally, they look like people being shot sometimes.
That's Robert. He's from a design collective called Forkscrew. They replaced the dancing silhouettes in Apple's campaign with images from the war.
We added a rifle in one case, and we used the Abu Ghraib image in another. But for the most part, the shift was a subtle one. That campaign seemed in itself a metaphor for a lack of attention to this war that's going on. A great metaphor for the kind of cultural indifference, you know, to absurd violence and torture at this place. Almost like a wicked indifference, a wicked form of indifference.
The satire is powerful. The original photos, even more so. Still, they didn't really change anything. Now most Americans are resigned to the fact that torture happens. We don't look at newly released photos from Abu Ghraib. We look the other way as waterboarding and other torture tactics are endorsed by the White House. But for a minority of us, the pictures did change something. When Jose Vasquez decided to leave the army after 14 years, he would look at those images again and again.
Seeing them sort of fueled my anger, and I needed that anger to sustain me and to help me overcome my fear of speaking out. So, you know, whenever I started to doubt, I could just easily, you know, bring those images back up on the computer and remind myself that what I was doing was the right thing and that what was happening over there was the opposite of the right thing. It was exactly the wrong thing.
For Studio 360, I'm Lou Olkowski.